This is Mitch with the Real Estate Investor Summit podcast. I'm here with Logan Fulmer and my partner, Mike Powell, and we're going to be talking about COVID-19, the coronavirus, and real estate investing right now. What are we doing? As we speak, Dallas has been shut down. You can only go to the grocery store. You can only go to the pharmacy. And what else was it, Logan? Grocery store, pharmacy, medical emergencies or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they got non-essential businesses are shut.
Non-essential businesses are shut down. We're relegated to our houses.
The business is really essential to me, so it's going to run from my living room.
It's very essential to all of us. That's why we're having this. Can you turn your volume up just a tad, Logan? And then I got Mike Powell, my partner, last 8 years. We've worked together to dismantle our office and reassemble it in 19 other places. How you doing today, Mike?
Good. How y'all doing?
All right. So where to start? I guess the first thing I thought of, and Logan and I were talking before this episode, first thing we thought of was like, where's our money? Let's get our money. How much money do we have? How much staying power do we have? And was the reason why we went to that. I even personally went down and emptied an account or two just so I had cash at my house. I don't know why, but, you start thinking about these scenarios. And if you don't be careful, you'll go off the deep end. But so I spent the last couple of days just making sure you had 2 weeks worth of food. You know me, I don't ever, if it's 2 weeks, I prepare for 1 month. You know, I might have prepared for a month and a half. I'm not sure, but I bought a lot of crap. So how did you prepare, Logan?
I did some of the similar stuff you did. We went and bought a bunch of food. We made sure our house was cleaned out, fuel in the vehicles. We probably won't need any guns or ammo, but we have plenty of that. We know where to get to it. We did get some cash in case ATMs and banking gets wacky. I know that sounds prepper, but, I think part of our business, the way we operate, we plan for the worst in deals and business. So when something like this happens, we're like, oh, my God, how bad could it be? Let me gather it.
Yeah. What did you do, Mike?
Exact same. We got some food. We've got a person that lives in and helps us with our kid and whatnot. We sent her back to Mexico, so she didn't have to worry about going back and forth and stuff like that. So we had one less mouth to feed, just things like that. Exact same stuff you guys did. We live in Texas, so all of us have plenty of guns and ammo. We didn't have to worry about doing any of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know why, but the first thing was, if the fit hits the shan, I need my 300 blackout with thermal night vision. Okay. That's what I need. I headed out to the ranch, man. I was there for a very short period of time, went in, grabbed my thermal and 15 rounds of 30 round clips. And I brought them home and I'm good now. So
I'm excited to welcome all these new gun owners to our community here.
Yeah. Right. So, I don't know. So where's the money? So we not only gathered, or Mike and I went through, figured out where the money were in the business that we own together. We made arrangements to get a lot of our money out of our own personal houses or deals just to stockpile it for staying power. Then I personally, I have seven other businesses. I went and figured out how much money was in the other accounts and made note, and then went and got my personal money out and brought it to my house. So I guess right now the date is, what's the date today?
23rd.
Today's the 23rd. If you're like most people who do collections, and Mike and I's business, we do mortgage collection, and we're going to talk about the three different kinds of collections. But you do a lot of flips, right, Logan, or do you do a lot of mortgage collections too?
We've got a little bit of each. We probably have more rental collections than anything.
Okay. So there's rental collections, mortgage collections, and then just collecting the one-time cash event, like flips or wholesales. So let's start with, I'll start with collecting mortgages. Mike, what do you see as the difference between collecting mortgages and collecting rents?
Well, mortgages are, should be, if you've done it correctly, a lot easier. You know, these people have skin in the game. They own it, or they're going to own it, you know? So collecting rent, they're like, well, I just won't pay rent. And if I got to move, I got to move. No big deal. These people have skin in the game. So they have a desire and a reason to pay.
Okay. So the lenders, only two lenders have called me out of the 33 that private lenders that we have. No banks have called me. Has anyone called you, Mike?
Not yet.
Has anyone called you, Logan? Okay. So let me tell you how my conversation went. They just wanted to know, at the end of the day, I was trying to answer and tell them all this stuff. All they really wanted to know was, is Mitch, Steven, and Mike going to hang in there, or are they going to hand, if things get crappy, are we going to hand them 20, you know, 15, 20, 30 houses? And I said, we're not going anywhere. If you, you know, I'll start from the beginning. The private lender, I said, look, and this is Mike and I's goal. I'll let Mike tell you. What's the goal, Mike? to take a nap.
You know, our goal is to come out of this without ever missing a payment, you know, and the reason for that is so that we look like we're their saving grace. You know, a lot of people lost a lot of money in the stock market, and then a lot of people have invested with us. The reason they invested with us is the constant payments, the constant knowing you're going to get paid, no ups and downs, things like
the
that.
The passive consistency, right?
Yeah, the consistency. And so, you know, we're gonna keep going, keep paying everybody. And when we come out on the other side of this thing, that'll definitely be remembered.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we jumped out to do real quick is we called our bank, not necessarily because we owe them a bunch of recurring payments, but we have open lines of credit. And we also had extended lines of credit. So we called them and said, hey, guys, things just got shaken up. We're actually going to pay our lines of credit down to almost zero in the next 7-5 business days. We want you guys to know that we're positioned going forward in a great situation. And by the way, look at our updated books, just so you know where we're at. And you obviously can see our cash accounts. So we're going to cut our credit lines down to zero, pay them all off, and have total flexibility. But we just wanted to give them an update so they could see our books and say, just see, we were trying to protect our credit lines is what it is, to show them how responsible and prepared we were for this, so that we have that available liquidity just from the line of credit there. But also so they knew we were being
able to yank them, so they don't
freaking out and hiding. And we wanted to turn around and say, whoa, we're not hiding, we're here. We want to be prepared. We want you to be our partner moving forward instead of you being scared of us or us being scared of you.
That's,
and we got
a
good response.
Our goal is, and who, you know, we're cautiously optimistic, but we would like to survive this without a blemish. And while the rest of the world has its issues, we're hoping that at the end of the day, they say, you know, those two guys, Mike and Mitch, never missed a beat. And that's the goal. Now, but so one of the private lenders says, okay, but what's the worst case scenario? And I said, well, the worst case scenario is they get down to a point where I said, we're going to make our next couple months worth of payments no matter what happens. But at that point, we might make a phone call and say, look, we carried the load the last 2 months on our own, had some losses, but we can't go any further. If we go any further, and I'm not saying 2 months is the limit, it might be 3 or 4 months. I'm not really sure, because we don't know, you know, how it's going to go until the first of the month. On the first, you know, it's the 23rd today. On the first, we'll start to get a picture. By the 8th or the 10th, we'll know how many people are in trouble. And we're going to talk about the conversations we're going to have with those people here in a minute. But I told them the worst thing will happen is I'll call you up and I'll do what we'll exercise the plan as it always was from day one. I have the right to pay as agreed, or I have the right to come down and give you a deed to the house. Or we have the right to come up with some other solution as two willing parties, right? So they, you know, the first thing they said was, as private lenders now, remember, no. We don't want our houses.
Yeah.
Okay. I said, so, okay, if you don't want the houses, then what has to happen is, like, if I get a payment on a house, it's easy for me to make the payment. I don't get a payment on a house, you got to hold off. We'll make a note of that. and we'll just stand right there. You know what? Stand right there on that account. And because here's the deal, they've stopped the ability for us to file foreclosure till May the 1st, right? Which the first Tuesday of the month is sometime past that. And there'll probably be a rush on that, you know, so the docket might be quite full. I would suggest if you are going to file foreclosure at that point, that you be the first one in line at 8 a.m. or whenever they open, because, I mean, you know, I see this might be a problem. You're going to have to get in line to get it on the docket. Number two is, I'm not sure, Mike, if we discussed it or not, but I think we did. We're going to file whether we're going to work with the people or not, just in case people don't follow through with increments of payments or do what they say. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, for us, we always do this for everybody out there. We file, even if we work out some kind of payment plan, we file so that it's teed up and ready to go for when people go back on their word.
Yeah. So, you know, it takes, what, 45 days minimum, probably 60 days at average, or 75, 80 days average. So we got the ball rolling, and that, and we warn our people, you're going to see some foreclosure stuff coming through, but if you do what you say you're going to do, then you have nothing to worry about. You know, we warn them. Let's get this straight too, Mike. And I know Logan feels the same way. Are we after these people's houses? Do we want these people's
houses? The last thing we want is everybody's house back, you know? Right.
It would be a coup. I mean, we'd probably make really good money, right? The three men on this screen don't even remotely believe that's the Christian way to do things or what we should be doing during this crisis. We're trying to get everyone to get through this.
Yes.
But
you don't want all these foreclosures. It turns into a big old train wreck. So there are a lot of little, kind of like we reached out to the bank early and said, hey, let's put something together. You know, we're going to have to start dealing with these folks early on. Some of the rental portfolio we've got, I think we're going to have to reach out to them and probably discount their monthly payment for a little while. And the reason I think that is so many folks are losing their jobs just because they get behind a month or two, in the normal economy, they would be able to catch up. In this case, they just lose a month or two worth of income. And most of these folks don't just go to their savings, or the next month they're making such a large amount of money that they don't make that Lamborghini payment. Now they make our extra house payment. I don't think that's what happens. And once people start to accrue, they're behind. So I think
we were gonna talk about the difference in collecting mortgages and collecting rent. And that's part of the problem with collecting rent is they don't have much skin in the game. Like some of the people that we sell houses to over the last couple of years that are making mortgage payments to us, not only put 10 to 12% down, so on just a $100,000 house, that's 10 grand, but we sold a lot of these houses as is, and they have put tens of thousands of their dollars of their own money or their labor into these houses. And then on top of that, the appreciation that's happened with these mortgages over the last, I mean, these properties over the last two or three years. So Mike and I have about 95% mortgage collections, and these people could have huge amount of equity, the difference between the value of that property today and what they owe us, okay? And speaking to the private lenders, we owe our lenders even less. So the lenders super cushioned. I would think it's going to be a little bit of rougher road for people that own a lot of rentals. And you agree, Logan?
I mean, it'll happen. At the end of the day, most of our rentals we bought a long time ago, and they're so low priced that even if we cut our rents in half, we're going to cover all of our bills. We'll have a little money still left over, so we're okay. But I mean, naturally, you make less money during this period.
Well, the idea is to survive this 3 months or 4 months, right? We're not caring about making money. It's just, we just need to survive this. Everybody, the whole country just needs to survive it. We need to do our part to help the other people, and whatever can be done to help us, or we need to help ourselves survive. We decided that on the second, we're going to start calling people who were late. What are we going to say to them?
Well, hold on real quick. So Logan, you were saying that you guys will discount it the next few months, try to get what you can and whatnot. And then, and what do you guys do going forward? Do you work on getting that, the, you know, going forward once everybody's back to work and everything, you know, hopefully hits normalcy in a short order? Do you guys go back and try to get that money, or are you writing it off?
I have a strong feeling that it's going to be written off. You know,
I have a better idea.
I do like mortgage, and I'd take that amount they owe, the 2 months, and finance it over the next 12 months. But honestly, I don't think that's going to play out well.
Logan, if your rents aren't at the top of the market, can you just add $10 or $12 a month to their rent payment for forgiveness? I mean, get something out of it instead of zero?
That might be a smart way to do it, yeah.
You know, if you're already over the top, here's the other thing. Last thing you want to do is call them up and say, I want a discount. I think I'd be calling every account, working out, like, how much do I need? How much, what's the most you can afford to pay right now? Don't just go, don't pick a random number and say, I'm cutting it in half. What if they could pay it all? What if he works at the grocery store and he's getting out boodles of overtime? You know, like, be careful not to just cut people's rent in half for no reason. And this is very important. I'm hoping that the people out there that can pay will pay, and the ones that need it will speak up, and that there's not a bunch of turds out there that just act like they can't pay. And if people say they can't pay, especially if I was a landlord, I'm not really going to take anyone's word for it. I need a letter. I need something from your company. You need to show me. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm just saying, I've been in the business a long time. I'm very jaded. There's a lot of liars out there. I had people shave their heads and tell me they had cancer, and I gave them 8 months without a mortgage payment because I was trying to do the godly thing, only to find out she never had cancer. You know, so like, I'm 24 years in the business. I don't believe very much anymore. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's a good idea. That makes sense. A lot of our policies are wait and see on things, and then we kind of handle it when the ball gets tossed to us. So I think that's a good, Yeah.
Yeah. But and I think I'd start the conversation with, look, we're all in this together. If you've got a good job and you're working and your industry's booming because of this, please just let's do business as normal, because I need it. Because if I go under, a whole bunch of other people are going under. Like I can honestly say to Mike, and I can say, you know, if they wipe Mike and I out, it's not just you're going to lose a house. 300 other people are going to lose a house, because look, in the mortgage game, they signed a contract to pay me, and they signed a wraparound mortgage, which they acknowledge that there's an underlying debt that Mike and I owe to our lenders. If that lender forecloses on us, he wipes out not only us, but he wipes out everybody that lives in the house.
Yeah. Wow.
So this is how we're going to try to appeal to these people. If you know, it's not just your house on the line, it's 300-400 houses on the line. And you need to do your part. Pay as much as you can. If you can't pay at all, then tell me how much can you pay? Because we still have to make our payments down here, or everybody's losing the house, whether we like it or not. That's how we're presenting it.
I think that's the reality. I mean, I think that's a good way to do it. You're kind of letting everybody know they're in the same boat, and it's somewhat almost of a position of social responsibility. Do your part, guy. Don't be a deadbeat. You're here. You're in this with all of us too.
Great way to put it, social responsibility.
Social responsibility. I'm writing that down. We all have a social responsibility. What else is left to say about collections? We're still sending out the letters. We're still sending them. We're going to talk to them. We're going to tell them, you know.
Don't wait. The biggest thing is, don't wait forever. Jump on the phone the second and the third. You know, hey, sorry you didn't make your payment the first, you know. Whether they usually make it the first or not, still jump on the phone. Get ahead of it. Don't wait until the 15th.
Yeah. And let's drive into everyone's psyche, you know, social responsibility. You have a social responsibility. Don't play games here. This is not a time to play games.
You have those early indicators too. If no one answers the phone for the first three calls, you know what's up. The message is there.
Well, and by the 15th, investors will start to be able to know what, you know, how much water they're taking on, how fast, you know?
Yep.
And I guess that's it on collections. Anything else on collections, Mike?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, sales. Tell us about – we had some decent sales already last week. I don't know – last, of course, last week's going to be completely different than today, I'm pretty sure, because I think
– Well, so here's kind of an interesting story. I was sitting at the office, and our salesman was doing contracts and stuff, and we had three closings last week, and he came in on one of those closings and said, hey, we got a problem. I said, okay. I went in there, and they said, sir, we really want the piece of land. We have all the money down, but we were told today that we're not supposed to come back to work until further notice. And they'd already given us $2,500 down and all that stuff. So what we did was we extended their closing for 60 days and said, if they can close earlier, they need to, you know, if they get back to work in the next 2-3 weeks, come close and whatnot. But they were definitely nervous to give that big down payment after being told, don't come back to work until further notice. So, we already saw a little bit of that repercussion, but they were ecstatic that we were willing to extend it the 60 days.
You know, we were in a situation. We've got some retail type sales, and a lot of stuff we sell, what we call retail sales. It's not really wholesale because we own the assets after we've done all the curative title work, but we sell it to investors on the market. And we had a couple of pretty high priced properties that were listed. We got contracts on them literally 10 days ago, and they're supposed to be closing Friday, which was couple of days ago, Monday and Thursday. And I had one of the investors call and say, hey, I'm going to terminate my contract. You can keep my earnest money. And I know that, you know, we do a lot of legal work. So I said, hey guy, you know, that's one of the liquidated damages, but I don't necessarily have to accept that. I can also go seek specific performance. That's in that same paragraph 15 there, the TREC contract. So I told him, I don't want to be in this situation, but you're telling me that you don't want to buy the house because you don't want the risk. You don't want your cash tied up in real estate. You're a big boy. So about 10 days ago, you came to me and asked me to take this property out of circulation and under the assumption that you were going to close. And I did what I said I was going to do. And now you need to do what you say you're going to do. You need to close or we're going to do a specific performance case on you. We've done these before. We know how this works. So please don't make me be the bad guy, but you need to do what you said you were going to do. And he called back an hour later and said, I've been through this before. I don't want to get sued. Okay, I'll close. So I hated to have that phone call, but it was very important. I made a commitment to him, and he made a commitment to me. Now, you, by God, you do what you said you're going to do, or this is going to
burn. It's a fine line, isn't it? Because I was thinking you were going to say you extended his closing, but that was probably a large amount of money, and you might have been able to liquidate it and do something to better your position for this if they wouldn't have waited till the last minute. You know, it'd have been different if they called you 10 days ago, but even then. 10 days ago, there wasn't even really a big problem. So
the other thing is the guy told me he had the cash. He showed me proof of funds. He was buying multiple properties. And at this point, we all made a commitment here, and we're going to have to live with those, just like I'm going to live with mine for the next few months.
Well, I totally agree with you, Logan. I mean, like you said, you took it out of circulation. You don't know if you could have sold it to somebody else in 3 days and already had it closed before all this happened.
Right. But
you committed to him.
Well, the other difference is you saw he had all the cash. He didn't have to make payments.
And that's why I accepted his offer. You know, so this is another good point. You know, somebody asked me the other day, what you going to do? And it just kind of came out of my mouth. But we've been preparing for a crash since 2012. Since the day I got a job in the oil field before I went full bore into real estate, I didn't have a lot of money before and had a lot of bad life stuff going on. And I started saving every nickel and planning like it was the end of the world tomorrow. So when these things, we negotiate every single contract like to mark the end of the world. We don't want to take option periods for sales. We want to get high earnest money, all these little bitty things. And they've been meaningless in the last 5 years. But this last week, we've had about $500,000 worth of sales that were planned to close in 5 days. And when people started calling us, I realized, wow, we did an incredible job of making these contracts. High earnest money, no option period, short closing days. On our sales, and it really paid off for us in our liquidity.
Okay.
Our reason for the 60 and 90 day extension is, you know, we don't want to force these people into something with all the uncertainty. You know, those guys were told not to come back to work, and we're going to have a 20 or 30 year relationship with these people. So, whereas I agree.
Why don't we just wait till they can pay, because they're not going to be able to pay tomorrow. We already know that
there's no reason to start off this relationship in that kind of a stance.
Yeah, it was a whole different buyer.
I think in you guys' case, you want to sell it to them. They want to buy it to you, and they're saying, give me a little bit of – a little time, and that's a whole different ball game.
Well, and we just earned a good client forever because they were astonished that we were willing to do that.
Sure.
Any chance we'd have sold it to anybody else, Mike, if we didn't make that agreement?
No, I mean, we you never know, maybe. But they had already done everything they did. They put up the earnest money. They were up front with, hey, we were told not to come back to work, you know. So, and we have other properties the exact same style because it was a piece of land we had broken up. So it just wasn't worth losing them at this point with what all is going on.
I think that's the key thing. We have other pieces to sell if there's another buyer that walks, you know, calls on the phone or walks in. But as of right now, it doesn't look like anybody's going to be walking into anywhere for a couple of weeks. It's not confirmed in our town, but, you know, Dallas is already shut down. So that pretty much. You can know that it's going to happen. All right. So anything else on sales, you know, selling properties? We got closings. How are people handling closings? Because we have a title company when we buy, but we don't offer a title company when we sell. One of the reasons is we're still a principal in the deal and we can use our purchase title title commitment to defend the title because we're not out of the deal. We're still, you know, we're still have an interest. So our title policy should still be, you know, and plus we know that there hasn't been any other debts accrued or any other liabilities on that title since we bought it, except for, you know, the private money that we borrowed, which we made the buyer aware of when we signed a wraparound mortgage contract.
Contracts here are still going through. Title companies are still open in San Antonio. I know that they're being super cautious on the closings and disinfecting over and over and over and whatnot. But as far as I know, everything's still up and rolling. What about you, Logan?
Yeah, so far, it's strange. We're the opposite of y'all. We buy with title insurance and we sell with title insurance. So our purchases are going to act like y'all's sales. We had a couple close the end of the month. At the end of last week, we did two purchases and we did a note closing. And we send mobile notaries out for a lot of those if the folks aren't in town. So as long as the mobile notaries are willing to be up and running, we'll continue there. Banking says they're still able other than the lobby's not open other than appointments, but we can still do wire transfers and stuff.
Is this considered an essential business? If they're policing people driving around and what are you going for? I mean,
I read on that list that construction was considered essential and I understand why, because it props our economy up. But at that point, where do you draw the line? I mean, I don't know how enforcement's going to be on that really. I did talk to some of the title companies that we work with yesterday and they told me they were preparing for closings in office, but some of the girls were taking home their check printers and their computers. So that they were teed up if they had to move from office to home, they could continue like that. But I don't know where you draw the line. If you've got constructions considered essential, does that mean the supply warehouse that supplies electrical products to the electricians essential? I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So our closings are in-house, Mike, right? So are we going to have closings?
Yeah, we'll keep doing them as long as people want to keep closing. People have the money to close. We'll keep rolling with them.
Can't we close online? Can you just send them the papers? They can sign a DocuSign or something. But the mortgage and the deed have to be signed in front of a notary, right? So
yeah, unfortunately, it's wet ink. You know, they got to be wet signatures. So no, we can't do anything like that.
Okay.
So
when do you go? When do you start talking to your? Is that everything on closings? I can't think of anything else on closings.
You know, I think that's it. One thing I think a lot of the general real estate is not probably thinking about is listings right now are not really getting a lot of showings and folks are wanting to pull their property. So you got a ton of realtors and folks that make money on the transactional side. If showings stop for the next 2 weeks or so, you're going to have a big 2-week lag. But what that means is the contracts won't happen for another 2 weeks. So, and then it's going to take another month to close. So a lot of the transactional side of real estate, not necessarily us, but the retail stuff, they're going to have a 6 to 8 week lag in their pay cycle. So it's going to be a big gap. It's going to hurt a lot of realtors and brokers and title companies, I bet.
Get ready, everybody, because when it does get turned back on, it's going to – everybody's gonna be super backed up.
Well, there's a saying, wealth comes from chaos. We're not causing or hoping or wishing for this chaos, but chaos is going to happen. And it's going to paint a certain amount of dire situations for people, whether we wish for it or not, which we don't. We don't. We're, no one's praying for this. Everyone's praying for this to end is what we're praying for. But there will be circumstances, and there may be people that need to liquidate superfluous pieces of property now to catch up with the ones that they're living in or the important things, you know? Because one of the things we've got to drill into our mortgage payer's head is that they didn't forgive payments until May. They just made it to where we can't file. You still owe the payments. I just can't go down and file because they shut the courthouse down because they don't want people working at the courthouse to be at risk of the disease.
Yeah.
Catching the contagious disease. So in our phone call to those people, we're going to let them know, like, because some of them are, we know one or two of them have already misunderstood, like they have 2 free months. We're like going to have to set them straight. No. You don't have 2 free months. I just can't file for foreclosure for 2 months, okay, or till May. So, but when I can, when they lift the stay, when the people go back to work at the courthouse so that they can accept my papers, I still have the right to foreclose, and you still owe me the 2 months worth of payments. So, for heaven's sakes, if you can make a payment, or don't think this is a freebie because it's not. You need to make the payments if you're capable.
I've already been told by numerous people that they think it's a freebie.
Yeah. We're going to work with the people that work with us. The ones that don't answer the phone, the ones that think they're owed something for free, it's not going to happen. The ones that try will do something. Just what you said, Logan. We could take the money they owe us and just tack it to the end of the mortgage, or we could make a second lien to the side with $20 a month or something, you know, something they can afford. But when do we start talking to the banks and the private lenders?
Well, Logan already talked to his bank.
Yeah, that was one of the first calls I made.
He talked to him about a line of credit, which may or may not even been used, and that he was paying down. That's one conversation. Our bookkeeper called us, Mike, said that we should call the banks because the banks, he said, for all his other clients, seem very willing to do interest only, or to, they're not giving away their payments either, but they're, you know, if you had a really short note with a high payment with a medium interest rate, they're willing to just go interest only and give you a little breathing room.
I think it's interesting. I think 08's still pretty fresh in all their brains, and so they don't want to have a bunch of stuff go bad. They want to do what they can to help people through this and get everybody, you know, it's kind of, there's a little more light at the end of the tunnel than there was in 08, because it's, hey, if we can battle through this for a month and a half, you know, we can probably get back to rolling. So they're probably going to be a little more helpful in something like that.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the big things that really hurt everybody in the last go is working through all that bad debt. It took so long to get through that because the real estate cycle is so slow. And I feel like the economy right now, the government's trying to do stimulus packages for so many parts of the economy that hopefully that would help a fast rebound and help the bottom be a little bit higher. But also, I think, like you said, the banks are, it's 08's fresh, and they're thinking, geez, we don't want to load up our balance sheet with all this bad debt and all these train wrecks again. If we give, like, kind of like you guys' mortgages, that money is there. Either you're going to give it away or you're going to accept it later. But when you have millions and millions of commercial loans and hundreds of millions of dollars in commercial loan, that's real estate's going to go underwater. Those borrowers and construction guys are going to go underwater. And I'm betting they're going to forgive more of that than we expect in order to keep them alive.
Yeah, I think it's probably fresh in their mind as well. But maybe, I just had this idea as we were talking, maybe when you call the banks to see, I don't really want to call the banks up front, but then my bookkeeper changed my mind a little bit because he said you might want to find out what they're offering or what they're going to offer. in case you need it.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? And so I would say, as my social responsibility to the bank, I would act socially responsible. Look, if I can make my payments, I'm going to make my payments, bank. No problem, you know. But if push comes to shove, what's going on? And then plant this other seed. And on the other side of this, Mr. Banker, if you need some help liquidating some properties, I'm still going to be here. Don't do what they did last time and wait so long. The investors could have solved all of those problems that those banks had if they'd opened up, if they had a little wider open arms for them. But they made it impossible for investors like us to come solve their issue for a long time.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. You're right.
So, you know, in the event these banks do eventually have to file some foreclosures, you want to be the guy saying, I'd like to see that portfolio of property if and when it ever happens. Now, the private lenders, you have a lot of private lenders too, don't you?
No, we don't have really a ton of that. We've dealt with most of our own liquidity. And
well, your private lender is your partner. Right.
I mean, that's fair to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a little bit different. We have like 33 private lenders, as we stated towards the beginning. We really don't want to bother these people at all unless we have to. We would love to make it through like we did the last recession. No missed payments, no phone calls, no asking for help. We just made our payments as agreed.
I would bet on a portfolio y'all size, y'all could probably go with some pretty heavy vacancy or even delinquency and still be able to cover your nut to them, because there's a little bit of a spread in there.
There, it is true. It's, you know, we start struggling when it gets a little over half of the people don't pay anything. Then we're starting to pull money out of our pocket, which is all right, too, for a little bit. I mean, I'm willing to buy that reputation of, man, these boys didn't even miss a beat. I'm willing to pay some money for that reputation. I'm honest to God, I'm willing to pay for that. Because, you know, we made it through the 2008, Mike and I made it through the 2008 recession with not one missed mark. And the people that loaned us money were amazed because it was such a debacle. If we could do it two times in a row... you know, we have some new private lenders, of course, but a lot of them are the same people from, you know, we've had them for over two decades. So a lot of them. So it would just, it's our goal to try to make it through and be socially responsible and take it on the chin here a little bit if we have to. I'm willing to buy that reputation. Said not only did they make it through one recession, these boys made it through the COVID-19 era, you know.
I think a lot of businesses don't plan for this kind of stuff. They're just keeping a very, very small amount. They don't ever think these bad cases are going to happen. So I feel like being able to get – having that kind of savings and being mindful during these times of expansion and economic prosperity – a lot of people are out there going buying extra stuff. In our case, we weren't buying the extra stuff we didn't need. But that money, that excess that we saved in those times is what we're going to use right now to operate below the line. So it's kind of like you don't get the excess in the good times, but you also don't suffocate in the bad times. It allows you to kind of coast through that. You know,
well, if the money that you save during the good times gets you through the bad times, if nothing else, just – with your reputation intact, then you are set for a boom.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what else to say about that, except for it's also during this time, you'll be really grateful if you stayed in your lane. Like if I was thinking about the last recession. One of the things that hurt me the most is I loaned $1 million against some high dollar 15 lots in a gated community with $500,000 houses.
Okay.
When the recession hit, there was no way to, it wasn't what I do for a living. I buy houses. If a house goes vacant, I can rent it out. I can still generate some kind of income with it. These high dollar lots, you know, they wouldn't let me graze goats on them or anything. This was in a gated community with $1 million houses. I could make no money off those lots. And my partner and I, in my partner in the loan business, Raymond, we made $8,000 a month payments on those lots for 2.5 years before anybody even stepped foot to even look at the first one.
Ooh.
You know, fortunately, during the good times, we had bought assets upon assets upon assets. And $8,000 a month, which was $4,000 out of his wallet and $4,000 out of my wallet, did not affect our lifestyle one iota. Did it break your heart and piss you off every time you had to write the check for 2.5 years? Oh, my gosh. You kept asking yourself, why did I get out of my lane? Why did I do something that wasn't what I do? Because if it was what I – if I had been in the lot development, land, high-dollar residential business, I probably would have heard this train coming.
So you got guys that are very disciplined, and you also have guys that watch like the guys like the Grant Cardones of today that say 10X everything, and I'm all for like growing and pushing yourself. But in real estate, guys want to start out here and go here and go here. Everyone's always looking for the next biggest thing. So what you're saying, in my opinion, is huge. We've done a good job of doing exactly what we do. And we're always looking at the bright, shiny objects of this bigger project, but we walk from a lot of times. And right now is the time where we're so thankful for that.
And I'm not saying that you don't ever do anything different, but don't do 10 things different all at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, because if something like this shows up, you're going to get smashed.
Dip your toe in before you jump in.
Yeah, right? and even then, you know, I have 8 businesses. They're all offshoots of each other. They're all real estate related, but I mastered one and then I took on another one that was a really close match that was really entwined with, it was like the byproduct of the one. You know, I figured out I have this machine in this one house flipping company and it has exhaust. So I figured out how to turn my exhaust into another business. Like if you have a lumber yard, you're cutting boards for people. What do you get? You get sawdust piled up. You either have to pay to haul the sawdust to the dump, or you figure out something to make out of sawdust because it's free.
Yeah.
Stacking up on you every day. So that's how I grew those businesses. They're all very, they're not from one end of the spectrum to the other. They're very closely related and they feed off of each other. So this will be a good time to learn the two lessons. Sometimes in my life, it's always been best to grow slow. You agree, Mike?
Absolutely.
Stay in your lane. And during the good times, make sure you put enough away to survive a hell of a storm.
Yeah, those are all solid lessons. 100% agree.
All right, so we're down to advertising. Are we chasing new business now? There's going to be opportunities because of the chaos. Mike, what are we doing?
Absolutely. I got my guys working today. You know, we want to keep them working, keep them making money, help them get through this. We can afford to do it, so we're going to do it. I bought a house yesterday. I bought it for what I think is a ridiculous price. Even in bad times, I think it's a ridiculous price. So we're going to continue to buy because, you know, we need some inventory. It doesn't mean we're going to buy forever. You know, we'll have we'll turn off the spout at some point, but we're in some need of some inventory right now. So we're buying.
Yep.
The first thing you have to believe is that this is going to end. I believe it's going to end sooner than later. Could that be 30 days or 60 days, or 90 days, but it's going to end, right? So I think there's going to be a lot of revenge buying. You know, this thing's not happening because of poor economic decisions. This is a completely out of the blue, devastating event.
Freak event.
Yeah. This economy, I predict, will roar back. It will roar back. It might be the fastest comeback ever in the history of the world. In fact, it will be, I predict, when we get a handle on the virus. You know, so there's going to be a lot of revenge buying.
You know, also too, this economic engine doesn't stop. Sometimes it's running at idle or sometimes it's not running at 5,500 RPM. It might be down to 2,000 or 3,000, but it's going to continue. They're not 100% of the people are getting laid off. Not 100% of the people are out of money. So how that translates to sales and needing inventory, we're still going to need the inventory. in my opinion, you might not be selling a house for $100,000. Now, you guys are a little different because y'all are able to set your pricing based on the rents and a metric that you have. So that's a little different. But in our case, where we're selling more stuff to a retail buyer or just an investment type buyer, I think the buyers will still be there. There'll be few of them and the demand will go down. So the pricing will go down. But at the end of the day, the market will still be available and we'll still have the exposure. So I think we just have to lower our pricing a little. So a house that I would sell for $100,000 to a flipper, I'm probably going to have to sell it to him for 60 or 70. But what does that mean? I just have to adjust my spend. That's all.
Yeah, and if you have the chance to liquidate some of these properties, even if you don't make any money, liquidate it and get your money or get liquid again. You know, like we had some people, we don't normally like to sell stuff for cash, but we had some people offer some cash. I said, I think we should take it right now. You know, we'd much rather owner finance this thing and get a 30-year note, but we're facing an unknown event here. We should take the cash.
Well, and we had a few that were under contract and were in the option period, and they asked for a little more than I would normally give, but it was like, you know, with not knowing what's going to go on for the next couple months, let's give a little bit more than we would on that option period and on their ask to get that deal done.
Yeah, let's lighten the load, even if we don't make as much money. What we can lighten, we're you know, what we can scuttle, we're scuttling, you know, for money. So do you keep advertising, Mike? Do you keep looking for deals? See, we're, just so people know, our acquisition people get paid upon success. So we're under no payroll pressure, but we're under pressure to keep good people to stay with us and to be socially responsible to our tiny little community in our office to do the best we can for everybody that we can.
We're still advertising. They're still cold calling and doing all that stuff because – you know what, now more than ever, people might need to get rid of something. You might wind up with a really unbelievable deal because people need money.
And there's a doomsday fear out there and people handle this kind of stress differently. Some are like, you know, right on the edge of the building about to throw themselves out. You know what I mean? Like people handle things different. You know, in the Great Recession, people lost their money and they jumped out of buildings. I mean, I can't see there being enough money for me to jump, worth me jumping out of a building to my death, but people handle things different. So, and you may be able to get a lot of seller financing just so they have some money coming in to pay their mortgage. I mean, it could be a very good time. And let's not forget to offer down payments with seller financing as we're trying to acquire properties, because now's a better chance than ever to get that.
Yep, 100%.
So we're still advertising. Have we cut back at all, Mike?
Not yet.
It's too early, right? Everything's too early.
We need inventory. We were getting low, you know, with everybody buying so much, we were getting a little bit low. So no, we're not cutting back yet. We'll start cutting back when we see things haven't changed for a while.
Yeah.
We are though, giving ourselves 60 days to close instead of the traditional ASAP or whatever now, right?
Right. We're closed on stuff where we're like, this is an absolute no-brainer. We couldn't have bought this house for that. No way. This is a no-brainer. Get it closed. But we are pushing some of them out so we don't get too much under our umbrella too fast.
I take that back. We decided, you asked me, do you want to just put everything for 60 days to close? And we said it has to be a case-by-case basis, because if it's, you know, someone wants to give something away in the next 7 days, you got to make a decision. You don't have a choice to do that in 60 days. It depends on the seller's circumstance. If they can wait 60 days, they can. But if they can't, you have to make a decision.
Yeah. So we're keeping our advertising channels open because we want all the looks we possibly can. But expecting to have some economic depression in the near term, we're just basically tightening up our spend, but also we're choosing better asset classes, better locations, better quality houses to begin with, not quite so beat up. That way we have better stuff.
It just came to me. Is it a good time to negotiate with your advertiser?
It might be.
You know,
I think there's a lot of, probably, I think it's time to negotiate with everybody. We're right in the middle of a big construction project that's about to start, and I'm looking at the budget immediately saying, I bet you these guys are going to offer better labor rates next week. I bet you everybody's going to be offering better deals.
Well, and if you need labor, it's a great time to get it. A lot of people looking for work.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I also, you know, one of the strategies, I don't like to be that guy who's looked at as a total shark, you know, say, well, markets crashed last week, you need to discount your services. You know, I was thinking about just calling the drywall guys back and say, hey, guys, y'all sent me your bid a couple weeks ago. I just want to see, do you want to resubmit this thing? Do you want to relook at it? By the way, I'm not doing long-term payments. I'm paying for the materials, and I'm paying cash at the end of each week, like actual cash, not a check or credit card. I'm paying cash at the end of each week for labor completed. Do you want to maybe look at this bid a little bit? Does it change at all? And I have a feeling you're going to get some good consideration there just for offering those terms.
Okay, so let's talk about this, the next subject. If we're, in fact, shut down for the next 15 days or 2 weeks or a month, whatever it is, I think it's going to be 15 days. What are we going to do with this time? This is an opportunity, really, to do something completely different. It doesn't have to be lost time, does it?
No. Yeah, all right. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead, Logan.
All right. You first, honey. our office call is going to be a Zoom call today. That's our first time we've had a remote meeting. It'll be much like this one. But a lot of our agenda looks at housekeeping. We're reorganizing all of our Dropbox files. Somebody and I, we're going to go into the office and actually organize my office, just one person, probably me. We're going to go do a ton of cleanup. We're going to go back through our files. We've got a bunch of forms and templates. We're going to revise the ones that need to be updated from 2019 to 2020. We're going to go back through our books and look at any little accounts receivables and payables that need to be cleared out. We're going to just tighten everything up because we're going to have the time. We want to, a big thing for us is, we have the ability to pay all the people that we have on staff and continue paying them where folks are laying off. It's my turn to give back to my employees. And I can say, hey guys, I've asked y'all to give a lot to me. I've had y'all work long hours. Sometimes I've been demanding a shit on a Saturday when you're not in the office, but now's the time where I'm going to keep you on the payroll 100%. I'm not discounting your pay. I'm not firing you. I'm not laying you off, but I'm going to make you work. And we're going to tighten up this business during this week time.
So we're doing the exact same thing, and you know, it's somewhat of a blessing. You know, Mitch and I have run so fast for so long that it's kind of a, we're looking at it as a positive. You know, we get a chance to sit down and redo some spreadsheets, you know, just do a lot of housekeeping, like Logan's saying, a lot of housekeeping. You know, you always have that stuff in a small business where you had wish you had more man hours or you wish you had a little more downtime. Well, this is our chance to do it. So consider it a good thing for now.
You don't have a choice, so figure out what to do. If you're in the educational business, it's a no-brainer. It's a time to just rack up content. Everybody else is going to be sitting at home. Start doing interviews with each other. You know, you could probably do interview after interview after interview, or write your book or finish your book. I mean, there's something to be done. You don't have to look at this as a forced sitting on the sofa watching Oprah Winfrey for the next 15 days. There's a lot you could be doing if you want to do it.
Yeah. So will this be the next era for baby boomers? I mean, is this going to be another baby boom deal?
Yeah. The baby boomers are, yeah, there'll be a lot of babies being born in the next 9 months, I suppose. It's probably not a joke.
I'm being serious.
I mean, I'm sure. Let's just write this down. What's the date today? We're about nine and a half months from now. And let's take a look at what happened to the population.
We had our first baby like 9 months and 2 days after our wedding. And we, right now we have a 5-month-old, and my wife the other day was like, oh my God, are we going to have another baby? Like, we might. It's going to be another funny story. It happened like one day after the shutdown of the corona.
Or you could have another, or you could do the books. Which one do you want to do? Or you could create a spreadsheet. Let's see. All right, so I think we're going to wrap this up unless y'all have anything else. I mean, I think the bottom line is we're cautiously optimistic, and we're not doing marginal deals. If we buy anything, we're buying great deals.
Yep.
We're trying to still do sales as much as they'll let us. and we're going to ride it out. And, you know, the United States of America is the greatest country on the planet. It has the greatest spirit, one of the greatest spirits ever known. And the American people aren't going to go under over this. And thank goodness, it seems that we have real leadership all over the country. There's leaders. Leaders are taking and doing, you know, everything they know to do. And, you know, you'll never agree with everything they do, but they're not doing nothing. They're doing a lot. And I think we need to say our prayers at night and help our politicians and our leaders make good decisions, timely decisions, quick decisions, good decisions. And remember, being fearful or afraid or curling up in a ball is not going to help anything, no matter how bad your situation is. It's not. If you got a fear, you just got to go right to it. If there's nothing you can do about it, don't saddle yourself with paralyzation and grief and fear. It's easy to say if you're not there, but it's true to say that it won't help you. So find some other way. If you're really struggling, reach out to somebody and talk. Find someone positive. Find someone who's in your corner and talk. That's what we're trying to do here, talk to people. All right, you guys, anything else?
No, man, thank you for having us.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. It always is.
Thanks, right. Logan. And I should have said this at the beginning, but I'll say it now. Logan's in San Antonio, Texas, and is one of the guys that we really respect because he does a large volume of properties. One of the guys I can say, you know, that we actually push each other to do that quantity of deals. And so we've always taken we don't take an adversarial approach to each other. We've always taken like, you know, what do you know? Now, I'm sure he's not telling me his deepest, darkest secret, how he found that last thing, but we share hundreds of ideas all the time. So I'm glad you came on, Logan. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mitch and Mike. I really appreciate it. I mirror what you say, man, 100%.
All right. If you guys, you know, Zoom is not that hard of a program. If you're in a community and you have other investors around, maybe you need to meet with your investors and talk about what's going on in your specific market. You know, it's not a bad idea. Get a little brain consortium going and plan. Try, see what other people are thinking in your community. All right, guys, this is Mitch Steven with the Real Estate Investor Summit podcast. I'd like to thank the sponsor, TaxFreeFuture.com. If you do not have a tax-deferred or tax-free account, you have no idea the size of the tool you are leaving out of your tool belt. Please go to TaxFreeFuture.com. Check out the 37 little video vignettes. You'll have to give us a little micro information, but we promise not to beat you up. You're going to discover what your financial advisors are not telling you. We're going to tell you why they're not telling you, and we're going to show you what you can do with what they're not telling you. And then you do with it what you will. TaxFreeFuture.com. All right, you guys, thanks a bunch. We're out of here.